Hello, and welcome to today's episode of It Depends. I'm Daniel Pritchett, and with me is David Mo Mohundro.
Hello, how are you?
All right, and Ben Robin.
Hello.
Hi, Ben. Today we're going to talk about chatbots. And before we get into it, remember we have a Twitter account, at ClearFunction, and these podcast episodes go out with the hashtag #ItDepends. Please check them out. Respond. We'd love to hear from you. Ask a question. You might be featured on the podcast. All right, guys. Today, chatbots. Mo, tell me about what you think about when you think chatbots.
So the first thing that comes to mind for me, outside of some of the ones we've used here to sort of burn each other, we can have a story time in a little bit, but it's GitHub uses one. They have one called Hubot, and it's a platform as well as, I guess I should say it's a library as well as a way that they're doing things. But we're getting into specifics here, but GitHub uses Hubot for deployments, for checking statuses of their servers, for just about everything. They have some really good blog posts out there, which we will link in our show notes to sort of talk about, so you can go check out the details. But that's the first one I think of.
All right. So that sounds kind of like ChatOps to me, but I know there's some other wrinkles in Hubot. Ben, what do you think when you hear chatbots?
I think about how all of my favorite apps that I use all the time, mail clients, Twitter metrics, are all front-ending with chatbot interfaces, with chat interfaces.
Can you tell us about some of those?
Yeah, sure. Astro. Which is an email client for Mac.
So I'm visualizing my Gmail inbox. Yes. Where does chat come in?
There is a separate pane or panel where you have Astrobot, and he or she or it pings you when certain events happen. So it's like, oh, this VIP Daniel just emailed you. You might care about this. Oh, Mo asked you a question. Did you answer? Can I take you out to lunch?
So Astro is reading your email and trying to anticipate things that you'd like to do about it in response. Instead of just giving you a ping, Mo sent you an email, it's giving you a written, almost human interaction. Astrobot's like, hey, check it out, mail from Mo.
Basically. So you're familiar with the concept of priority inbox and other inbox?
Sure. Yeah.
Seems like Astrobot is like a step away, even further abstracting. Here are, you know, you've got your thousands of emails a day, but here are the ones you really, 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 really care about.
Okay.
Which is interesting.
You got any other apps with bots that aren't telling you what's on your email?
Yes.
What do they do?
Crowdfire is a popular social media, Twitter, Instagram metrics app.
Yeah.
And they have recently redesigned and front-ended with a chat interface as well. I don't find that one to be as helpful because I just go back to the old way that it looks and use that stuff. Another one, obviously, that lots of people are familiar with is Slackbot.
Right.
Slackbot is a chat
absolutely.
Bot.
Yeah, I use Slackbot often for reminders. So / remind me to go pick up the kids at this time or things like that. We also use it to remind each other to do things as well occasionally.
Yep. I remind Daniel to tweet about the podcast every Monday, I think it is, something like that.
And that works out pretty well because Slack is already integrated into multiple platforms I'm playing with. So
that's right.
I might get a push notification on my phone because somebody typed into his Slack on his desktop app days ago. May or may not be good for my life, but it works. So, you know, there's useful things there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right, and that really gets to what chat is to me. It's a platform or a message bus. You have text going from one device to another device, one person to another person. And I can apply everything I know about programming to interpreting those inputs and generating those outputs.
Something, Daniel, that you said that I hadn't really thought about before we were prepping for this conversation was the other places that something like a chatbot is used, like in a phone bot or something. Mm-hmm. It's like that could be built with that, and no one is coding against voice APIs. They're coding against text.
Right, right.
But it's voice to text recognized. So it is interesting to think about how this technology is probably used in even more places than we're realizing.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good point. It sounds like you think of it more of a platform maybe, or like a tunnel. Like, so you go in one side and then you do all kinds of programming things to whatever that input is to do something on the other side of
sure,
the tunnel.
Sure, I mean, it's a medium to me. I remember when I first had this epiphany that web browsers and their hypertext transport protocol, they're receiving plain text strings coming in from the browser. The browser saying, hi, I want to know what you have at route /bin.php. And the web server takes nothing but that information and says, what do I have under bin.php? Does tons of work. And then it formats its own text and sends it back. That is effectively how chatbots can work. And you can plug a mobile app up to a web service now, and chatbots can do the same thing. I mean, a web server or a chatbot, they can both do a lot of the same work.
One of the things that I sort of, when we talk about text, is you think about the Linux tools and how those are almost all, if not all, text-based in their approach. So piping to grep is grepping over text.
Right.
The output of the tools is returning text. And so you can chain together a lot of single-use tools in Linux, and you have a great deal of power. So the implication then is, it's instead of on a single OS, this is spread across and hooking up whatever platforms you wish at this point.
Sure. If you look at a fairly simplistic chatbot, we'll call them skill implementation, your bot is listening to an endless stream of text coming through a channel. Like, say you're in an IRC room or a Slack room, and the bot reads every single line that comes through, and it knows who it was and when it was. It can look at that information and decide, do I have any registered reactions to this thing? So maybe the Slack bot remind me. Every time you send it anything, it goes down its list of key phrases, and if it sees remind me, then it takes the remind me, and it's got a line of text. It might be Slack bot remind me or remind Daniel, publish the podcast on Twitter. So it's going to take that published podcast on Twitter, ship it off to its remind me module, which is probably just some PHP code written somewhere, and unpack it. And it's at that point, it's almost indistinguishable from a controller action in an MVC web page. It's just simple input, your basic business logic, and then an output.
Something, too, on Slack, we see this with if you ever post a link to like a Google Doc or a Gist, it's not, it's Slackbot watching all the other text, not just the slash remind me, but it's looking for links, and it's what throws in, hey, this looks like a Google Doc. You want me to import this? This looks like a Gist. So then you can respond with a, you know, yes, just this one time, not now, you know. So those are other places where that same tech is used.
So if it's as maybe amorphous or multi-purpose as you make it out to be, what do you think is the reason that chatbots sort of as a service or chatbots have become such a big thing? Chatbots are like the new mobile app. It's like everybody wants one. Not really sure what for yet, but we know it can do cool things, so build it for us. Why?
That's a really good question. One thing that's obvious is Siri is fun and popular with millions of iPhones, maybe billions of iPhones out there. So people are expecting a plain text input, and I'm sure the average layperson's not going to realize I say a sentence to my phone, it gets parsed by this module and translated into text and sent to a back-end service. But as a developer, it's easy to conceptualize it that way. So people get used to that. All of the big social networks, namely Facebook and Twitter, are trying to build their own all-encompassing communication system. So Facebook wants Messenger to be where commerce happens, where private communications happen. So they've already got you on. And I think mobile devices have a lot to do with that, just because not everything is best, not every interaction is best served by pointing and clicking on a web page designed with an HTML layout. I mean, HTML is not the alpha and omega of human interactions with computers. It's just another useful way of getting things as inputs and outputs into complex systems.
I suspect there's probably a little bit of a generational side to it as well, just in terms of...
That's a good point.
You know, you see, you know, people opt for texting each other over calling.
Right.
Or just how big Slack has gotten over the last 3 years as compared to email.
Yeah, sure.
And Slackbot has such a personality. You know, same with Siri. I think originally when it came out, it's not as a shiny toy to people today because it's a little older. But Slackbot in particular had such a personality.
Right. And personally, Slackbot type things have been my wheelhouse as far as bot work's been for years. I really love that. I'm not super highbrow with it, but I'm branching out for professional reasons.
Yeah, we haven't mentioned your upcoming book, but you have a book.
I'm writing a book about chatbots. It's for developers, and it's, again, for sort of lowbrow skills. Given you grab an input from, say, your Slack bot, send it to a method that does a single thing, render a module that does a couple of things, and that's probably going to go to an external API or maybe an in-memory database, and then sends it back to your chat room. I've found through working on these with local chat communities, with IRC and Slack, that this particular type of programming is particularly accessible to less experienced developers. We worked on a bot that was written actually based on Hubot. Mm-hmm. GitHub open sourced the back end of that. I'm sure they had to do some work to make it into a framework and not just a single bot. But
right.
They open sourced it. So we're running Hubot on a local chat room for Memtech. And you can get a Hubot, I forget what they call them, a Hubot script, which I guess now I'm kind of leaning towards calling them skills because it evokes something more meaningful to people. But a script is just a single file of CoffeeScript, which could be JavaScript, maybe 10, 20 lines. It says, when Hubot hears this, Hubot does that. And it's that simple. You could say, when Hubot hears what's 2 plus 2, Hubot replies 4. That's the simplest Hubot script or skill.
Mm-hmm.
And starting with that, putting it in a public GitHub repository, setting up continuous integration and deployment, pushing it to Heroku, I was able to get really inexperienced developers interested in this. Like, here's this bot. I can talk to it. I can see exactly how its responses are crafted. I want to play. And it's we got at least a dozen people playing with it, with just having this really, again, lowbrow bot doing JavaScript stuff out there. And it was a really meaningful experience for me. And I like to keep doing that.
It's almost like your own custom if this then that platform.
Sure, yeah.
That you can wire up your own skills, to use your word, to make it function with.
It's interesting when you talk about some of the other things, like when we were talking about Hubot, we should be sure to check the link out, but I mean, GitHub will ask Hubot to deploy releases, and it's just it when you're talking about some of the other, you know, things you can do with it, automation, if you, there is some step, maybe you have it automated into a script, but you still have to go run it, or you have to, just being able to, the visibility of saying in your deployments room /deploy or something like that, everyone sees the status, the bot responds with the status of the build.
Yep. And we do that a lot for all kinds of pipeline things in our just regular day-to-day. Daniel and I were talking about Heroku chat ops. You mentioned it earlier a few days ago, and it's quite an interesting opportunity, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, anything that you've been doing historically with the shell script that takes a few lines of input and spits out a few lines of output could just as soon be a Slack integration or a text message integration or send it to Twilio and have it read the results to you over the phone. I mean, that's the fun of chat or text.
And it's easy to, like you said, I mean, thinking about ops sort of thing, like escalate it, say, okay, there's no response in this amount of time. Escalate to text, escalate to a phone call.
That's how PagerDuty works.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It feels like you mentioned ubiquity of mobile phones contributing to the growth of chatbots. That's definitely true. It also feels like the sort of text interface on what are now pervasive, really tiny keyboards with just two thumbs has helped a lot. And I think also brevity. Like you just mentioned, I could run a script. I could put a script behind a chatbot that is, you know, hundreds, thousands of lines of code that does something that I can fire off with a single word in my Slack interface.
Yeah.
That's really appealing to me.
I mean, if you type 140 characters into Twitter and hit submit, it's millions of lines of code that are processing your 140 characters, and then you get back just a rendering of your own words. You can do that in any medium for sure.
So why would this be appealing? I mean, we're a web development agency. Why would something like chatbots as a service be that, you know, because we could build a chatbot for somebody listening to this.
Right.
Why would that be interesting to them in a business?
Like Mo mentioned, there's always automation opportunities. If you have people on your team who are already interfacing with semi-automated systems, maybe just having to send in the occasional command based on their own judgment or timing, you can bring that to them in a different medium. It could be text message based, or it could be audio talking to something. So that's useful for anybody. Maybe e-commerce, if you're trying to sell products on a web page, you might be able to also hook a bot up that can read your catalog, and maybe you could ask it some questions like, I don't know, Amazon bot, I want green socks today. It could send you not just plain text responses, it could send you formatted responses with images and links. Like, here's three green socks. Click on the one you want to buy, and boom, it's in your shopping cart. There's tons of options there.
It sounds like, to me, to really sort of see the value, I could see some people who would be skeptical in terms of everything being a Slack bot.
Sure, yeah.
But the key is, it doesn't all have to just be Slack.
Right.
By doing this, you can talk to any sort of integration you want.
Yep. The more creative you are, the more interesting it becomes.
Right. So it's sort of a hub of with spokes going out to multiple services versus having lots of this service connects to this service, but this service then connects over there. You've got a circle versus you can talk to any of the others through this common interface.
Yeah. Anything you've ever built a back end for, whether it's a web front end or a mobile front end or maybe a desktop Windows app, it's probably got a back-end server, and there's no reason that couldn't also be talking to Facebook Messenger or text messages or sending you voicemails. Any of that could be done.
It has implications for implicit increase in efficiency, increase in knowledge sharing, that's now all centralized behind some single word command.
Mm-hmm.
There's
a lot to do. Like, I think Mo was mentioning sort of generational differences. One thing I like to think about is movie theater times, like when it was show times for your movies. I know when I was a kid, you get movie show times by reading the newspaper,
right,
or by calling the phone number.
That's
and listening
right.
to pre-recorded
That's
message.
Right. That's right.
Yes.
10 years ago,
and
I
you
was
had
excited.
To wait for the whole message to right? go through to find the show you wanted.
Right. I was excited.
I remember
I guess
doing
turn
that.
Of the century, I'd get the same numbers through a really lo-fi mobile page. I'm like, wow, I can use my phone.
Yep.
To get these numbers, and then even better when smartphones got really popular around the iPhone debut. And now you can do the same thing with the Facebook bot. Say, ask it, you know, show me the movies from my local theater. Then it could spit back a few paragraphs of info right in your Facebook stream, and it's already grouped and searchable and tracked. And that's not necessarily any improvement over listening to the 2-minute phone recording, but
it's lots of time savings.
Yeah, and it's just
there's no informational improvement. You're getting the same content.
Right.
You're getting it where you already are.
Yeah, you're meeting the customers where they are.
Yeah.
If you're selling movie tickets, and we tell you we can get your movie ticket information in Facebook Messenger, and that's going to raise your sales in this demographic by X percent, then you can pretty easily do the math on how much it's worth to you to pay us to hook you up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I suspect that this may be showing my age, but I still go to Google for getting movie times or whatever.
Oh, I do too.
But it's you know, they're probably is going to be a generation sooner rather than later, who will begin to, I'm just going to text something or ask
I think
Siri
Facebook Messenger can order you Pizza Hut now.
Yeah.
Or Domino's. I'm not sure which one.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's still a fairly a wild west in terms of the medium and the commercial opportunities, because a lot of the bots you see are not really doing anything super interesting, or maybe the interactions are just not fun. There's a discovery problem, too. You can go on Facebook, and maybe there's a million bots, and most of them are crap, and then there's 10 that you really like, but how do you find them? I've signed up for Facebook bots, and there was one that I did just for fun because I was curious. I'm into bots, and it wanted to send me advice on dressing myself. So it was like, good morning, try putting on brown pants, and here's a picture of a model.
Interesting.
And I didn't really feel like it was helping me as it was presented, but then there was another one I did that was motivational quotes, and it sent me a quote. The very first one was from some startup thought leader guy that I'm just not really into. But I let it slide. And then an hour later, it sent me another one. And I realized that there just weren't enough knobs for me to adjust it. Like, the elevator pitch of we're going to send you things and they're going to cheer you up and make you have a good day was good, but the actual realization just wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a medium, and anybody can have taste and style in making it work out well, but it's not necessarily guaranteed that just because you put something in a chatbot, people are going to A, be able to find it, or B, enjoy it.
It seems like, y'all tell me what you think about this, but it seems like the ones that have the most success are the ones where it requires a little bit of investment. For example, lots of Slack bots with a space between there have a good amount of success because you're already in Slack. Siri has a lot of success because you're already on your phone. When you cross some of those boundaries, I like Google's, you know, hey, Google, works really well.
Yeah.
But you can't use that if you haven't. You can on the iPhone, but you have to be within the Google app or something like that.
There's definitely sort of a network issue and there's discovery problems. So you could build a generic bot that does things that could be useful in different media or different platforms. But if you want it to be really easily usable in Slack, like for instance, when I write a Slack bot, I write it with a specific Slack community in mind. I plug it in, I manage it. But the big Slack bot businesses, they've automated the onboarding to the point where somebody goes to the Slack bot warehouse and searches for whatever, and they find it, and they click add this to my community, and boom, the bot's there.
Yeah,
that's a whole different level of work. And if you're in the business of selling that, and you want to build your business around a single bot product, then you're suddenly going to have to do that same work for Slack and for Skype and for Bing and Alexa and 10 other things. And there it may have 90% similarity in what's under the hood that's fulfilling the request, but it's not free to get in all those different places in a native format.
I guess the other place where it's really has potential for wins is within a specific business, not maybe even a company, but like an industry or something like that, where you're solving problems specifically. Again, I go back to GitHub here, but they use something that solves problems for them. Distributed team, they've got people all over the place, but so they're all in their chat room because they're all over the place.
Sure. I mean, we've had problems that Hubot would solve on our own projects in the last few years. Imagine you've got a project manager that's looking through your Jira tickets, and they see, oh, this ticket's marked as done. Then they go to the staging server, and they're like, hey, I was testing it, it didn't show up. And then you go and look at the build server, and you're like, oh, that's because this build didn't actually get deployed.
Right.
With something like Hubot, or with maybe just a little bit more connection between Jenkins and Jira, you can see this feature that Mo said he finished is attached to that release, which has moved to this point. It may or may not be where you were looking. So that type of thing, you can help people help themselves.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
One thing I don't think we've dug into much yet is more of the big picture, exciting parts of chatbots that get businesses and big companies excited. So Siri is one. It feels like an AI almost. Like you're talking to a very smart computer. You can just tell it whatever you want, and it's going to understand, and you can have a back and forth conversation. None of that is free. I mean, when I talk about lowbrow chatbots, it's single input, single output, and I do my best to limit the scope of what I'm having to do to read your mind. But if you want to talk to, say, a customer service bot, it might have more of a phone tree, or not a phone tree, but a decision tree, where you come in, and it's probably the same script they feed to their first entry-level customer support people. So you say, hey, I'm on your website, I'm having a problem. And then it's like, or I don't know, maybe a bank could say, press 1 to talk to a teller, or press 2 to if it's about billing or whatever. So you kind of route people through the things that you care about. And there's people that are diagramming these conversation flows for their bots and trying to implement them with tools that let them sort of map that. And that's cool, but that's, again, a specific subset of the opportunity for conversation flows. It's not everywhere.
Do you have y'all heard of Eliza?
Yes.
The AI, you know, psychology bot? So it was, correct me if I'm wrong here, but it was in the 70s, I think. It was one of the, it passed the Turing test.
Right.
It was basically, the test was you have people, the Turing test, if you're not aware, is where someone is talking to something and they think it's a real person.
Right.
Instead, it's a computer. And basically what it was, it's a psychology thing that asks lots of, why do you feel that way? Tell me more, please. Mm-hmm. It's really quite simple, but thinking about that as sort of one of the early, you know, generations of a chatbot. Eliza is an AI chatbot.
Yeah.
So
there's a lot of engineering decisions and design of user experience that goes into asking the right questions when you're building something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got to be broad enough that you hit your audience and yet not so broad that it feels like this is a fortune cookie I'm reading, right?
Right.
I mean, fortune cookie. Have you guys that's the best example I can think of. The fortune cookie is almost so broad that it's like anyone can read this and feel like this is, or like zodiac symbols, for example, is another one.
Have you guys ever played a text-based adventure game like Zork or Space Quest or something?
Yeah.
Those games, I mean, that's really early, I guess, human language detection and interpretation. Right. So you get a sentence, and then your program's trying to parse it and diagram the sentence, basically, like who's the subject, what's the verb, and what's the object, and then determine the intent. So then you say, I don't know, what's a good example from Zork? It's like, kill the thief with the knife, or throw knife at thief. And
I always go with, you're walking down an alley, and you encounter a goblin.
Right.
Do you bribe him with money, or do you run to the left?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's room's oddly order
specific.
I don't know.
But yeah, there's a lot to be unpacked there. If you just say run to the left, it's like, oh, to the left is a wall, or who's left, or, you know, what's on third.
Right.
And so you have to really, if you have a plain text interface, you have to wrap your arms around that problem and try to go through it. So one thing, I guess it's a time-honored way to punt, is, again, back to the bank's customer service. You type in numbers, right? You can do the same thing with a chatbot.
You have a fixed number of inputs.
Welcome to Ben's House of Bank Customer Service.
House of Horrors.
You could spit out Ben's House of Horrors. Instead of just saying, what do you want to do today? You could spit out a menu that's like, we've got four things available for you today. Number one is go get chased by a goblin. Number two is go meet the witch. Number three is get your fortune told. And those can all be hot links, and you can click into it, and it's like, oh, hi, I recognize you, and I see that you've clicked, I want to go talk to the goblin. So then you're suddenly filtered into Choose Your Own Adventure.
Right.
Those books, I'm sure, I used to love them as a kid.
I remember those. Yeah. Yes.
You can make a coherent story as long as you control people getting in and off of your rails, as it were.
And it feels like as the technology has developed, the options have definitely expanded from 1 through 9. And we've also done this sort of catchy thing where it's like, sorry, I don't know what you mean by that. Right. Siri says that all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you have an iPhone, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And Siri has, I mean, I'm sure hundreds of times more than sort of the bank phone call illustration you've been using.
Oh, no question,
But there still isn't, it's not infinite.
Right. And you can ask it a question it won't know the answer to, even if it can properly interpret what you're saying.
That's right. And so being able to design it in such a way that it still feels like it understands what you mean, even though it doesn't know what to do, has helped, I think, a lot in advancing the use of the technology.
And that's something you can do even at the individual community Slackbot level. You can say, here are these 10 specific skills. Like one of them could be chatbot, go look this up on Wikipedia, boom. Another one could be chatbot, tell me Mo's phone number, or chatbot, go text this to Ben. And under all of that, you can have catch-all handlers. Like, if we've been through the whole list of things that we have specific responses to and can't find it, go Google it and give me the top three.
Right. Mm. That's exactly what I was just thinking
of. That's what Siri does, basically. It's like, I found a Wikipedia page that has nothing to do with this.
That's right. And there are single operations that you can do that feel like it can do a ton of stuff. So, I mean, just even the Google search illustration, and then do even, like, I'm feeling lucky on it. So Google search and click the first link, and then... Right. You know, maybe you've fixed 70 out of 100 requests. Who knows? Right. But you've covered a ton of bases just on that single operation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so there's power in it.
Yeah. I would say you want to keep real close attention on the metrics of how many people are getting in, how many people are getting somewhere that looks like they probably got what they want in,
absolutely.
How many are just falling through the cracks.
Absolutely.
There's this kind of a level where if a percentage of too high of a percentage of your people don't get to a happy endpoint, they're going to stop using your system.
Right. I guess that's the final thing we kind of haven't mentioned yet either. For some reason, chatbots are fun to use.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people just like it. It feels natural. It's like you're talking to a person. We talked about the Turing test and Eliza.
Right.
You know, but it's just like the technology's almost, you know, you're familiar with Arthur Clarke's third law. Technology that's sufficiently advanced is indistinguishable from magic.
Yes.
And it kind of feels magical. Chatbots.
Right. Yeah.
And that's why we use them. We love them.
I mean, you know, it's a smartphone.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a phone. It's now a smartphone because it feels smart.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I never really thought about Siri as just a text-to-speech command line, but it's a command parser.
Sure, yeah. Right. I mean, that's the core theme of my book is you already know how to do things with plain text, so you're going to have a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just an incredibly sophisticated command parser.
Sure, sure. It's a really good voice-to-text.
Yeah, I think the natural language processing is the main component, too, that takes a huge amount of effort.
Oh, yes, yeah.
So
you go back and look, again, like at Linux and all the things you can do with simple, single-use, single-purpose, do-one-thing-well commands that work on text. That can then be applied broadly to bots like this.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, Hubot runs on Node. It is not hard to take your Hubot input and wrap it in a one-liner from a Node one-liner that says, shell out to Linux and run this command, splicing in this string.
Right.
Which I guess there's probably SQL injection problems, but you get it. You can execute a command on your Linux machine based on the plain text that your bot has extracted from the chat stream.
And I know we've gone back and forth on this a little bit, but it feels to me like, given the natural language processing, voice recognition piece, there's almost a chasm between sort of a chatbot like Slackbot and right. Alexa or Siri.
Yeah, I guess so.
But I guess that's an argument we could have.
Well, I would say that an Alexa or a Siri is a very sophisticated language system that's sitting in front of a plain old computer.
That's right.
Right.
If you have a team that's building 1,000 different plain text input-output skills, and then you have another team that's doing really serious advanced research with trying to interpret your words and parse them into plain text and maybe determining from those words what's your intent and so where can we route that. I mean, all of that research can be done in very small research labs and then leveraged by other companies. We don't all have to be language parsing experts. Right.
Well, yeah, and that's the reason, as I think about it, that you can consider them so closely related is because it's not that Alexa is open source by any stretch of the imagination, but it is a lot more open than like a Siri Nuance type of, as that sort of initially came out.
We're doing some research on the Microsoft Bot framework right now. And when I see it, I think Microsoft's already paid some PhDs to do a ton of research on taking somebody talking into a microphone and converting into a stream of text. So I'm going to pay them for the privilege of metered access to those streams of text.
That's right.
And then we're going to connect that to all the work I've already been doing for decades in this space. I mean, I haven't been doing chatbots forever, but I've been doing text-based programming as long as I program, right?
So that's right. Yeah.
Microsoft's done the research. I'm paying somebody to get me a Siri-like front end, and I'm just going to plug it into things that we can all already do, and it's going to be great for everybody.
They're taking the analog signal and turning it digital for us.
There you go.
Yeah, it's a great point. I think we've kind of come to the end of this conversation. So that's all for today. Thanks for listening. And we'd love it if you'd reach out to us on Twitter at ClearFunction or hashtag ItDepends. Throw out a question or share the episode with somebody you think might benefit from it. And we'll see you next time. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
You've been listening to It Depends, a podcast by Clear Function. Clear Function is a group of happy engineers based in Memphis, Tennessee. We partner with visionaries to bring their ideas to life. For more information, check out our website at clearfunction.com.